Yeah, so I was asked to speak on Srila Prabhupada, the ideal grihastha. So this is a little something that I had never spoken on before. But with a little bit of thought, I tried to come up with some ideas of how Prabhupada lived in grihastha life in the ideal way. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the Hare Krishna movement, met his spiritual master in 1922, and that's a very momentous occasion, which has been documented in detail. At that time, he was married and for about a couple of years, and he had only had one child, one young boy. His first child's name was Vrindavan. After meeting Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati on the rooftop of Uttadanga Junction Road, the place is still there. Actually, just last year, the devotees in ISKCON secured that place, and now we have it as a landmark memory of Srila Prabhupada first meeting Bhakti Siddhanta. So that was a great achievement to get that place after decades trying to get it. But we finally secured it, and that was the beginning of Srila Prabhupada's connection with his spiritual master, which later led to what we have today as the entire ISKCON society worldwide. And Prabhupada, when he met his spiritual master, it changed his whole way of life. Now he understood the importance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Before, he was a Gandhian and had protested the intervention of British rule in India. And therefore, he was very active in that. Later on, of course, he gave up that and became more or less engaged in worldly affairs. And then, of course, he had a business, which was, he was not the main person, Dr. Jagadish Chandra Bose, who was the head of Bose's pharmaceutical laboratories. Prabhupada had some knowledge of medicine and chemistry, and later became a pharmacist. And then, after only working a couple of years, he met his spiritual master. And then that changed his whole life. He decided that he wanted to support the devotees of Bhakti Siddhanta by doing something. So in his place in Allahabad in India, he opened up a little preaching center, and then the devotees would come and give classes. And Prabhupada used to love to lead the kirtans. Even we connect Prabhupada a lot with his vakya, his words. But he used to love to lead kirtans. And he was very good at playing the mridanga. And he taught devotees how to play the mridanga. Of course, we play a little different now. We have added a few beats to the Prabhupada's original tini tini ta 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 tini tini ta ta ta. So he's added a few. But Prabhupada, you know, he was, and of course, Prabhupada did so many bhajans, but he loved the kirtan. And so when the devotees were coming, one sannyasi, one brahmachari, and others would come to his place, and he would arrange for people to come, and they would. And so his interest in the whole society of his spiritual master started to grow. And of course, at that time, his family was also growing, and his business was also increasing. He was becoming more and more expert as his business, so much so that his employer, or the owner of the business, Dr. Bose, gave him responsibilities to take care of the business, and at the same time he opened up another pharmaceutical plant in another place and made Srila Prabhupada, his name was Abhay Charan at the time, he made him the head of that particular section. And of course Prabhupada even created his own toothpaste. I don't know if you know Prabhupada toothpaste. We have it. We used to call it Prabhupada toothpaste. It's a combination of I can't remember all the ingredients. There's one devotee in America who sells it. It's called Prabhupada's toothpaste. And it's just like salt and some kind of neem and a few other ingredients. Quite nice. You brush your teeth, you become Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada's way of spreading Krishna consciousness through dental care. So that was Prabhupada. But the thing is, as his life was, in spiritual life was becoming more and more an interest to him, you know, he also found it very difficult to maintain family and at the same time to keep his business going. It was just a natural drawing towards the spiritual. And not that he neglected his material duties. He was a dutiful householder. He had a nice wife. Her name was Radharani Datta. His father arranged for that marriage. He wanted to marry another girl, but his father said, no, you marry this one, because the other girl was too good-looking. And that was, he said, because she's too good-looking, you wouldn't be able to give up household life so easy. So you should marry this one. She's not as good-looking. So that was some strategic tactic, anyway. So he agreed, he followed his father, and of course she was a very nice wife. And Prabhupada had five children. He had five children, he had three boys and two girls, actually. But Prabhupada went, and he had a business, very successful. But he found it difficult to, and he didn't have enough, what we say, resources to maintain his family at the same time, carry on his business, and at the same time practice spiritual life. So more and more his life in spiritual circles and his attraction to the Gaudiya Math, his spiritual masters, started to increase more and more and more. And at one point, his business started to take a downslide. Actually, it was destined by his astrologers that if he would have stayed in business, he would have been one of the richest persons in all of India. Wow. And people in India are really, really rich. I mean, you got such a dichotomy that the space in between is unbelievably big. You have people that are so rich that they're billionaires by you know, Western standards. But at the same time, we see the other side. People that's hard, people hardly have nothing. So Prabhupada was destined in the material sense to be very wealthy and have success in all areas of life. But because of his attraction to Krishna consciousness, he found himself not able to keep up his material responsibilities in the way that would have been a man who was very much progressing, successful, you know, developing. So at one point, you know, he started to spend more and more time there. And his family was feeling a little neglected. But Prabhupada tried to balance that out, but it was very difficult because his heart was drawn more and more to Krishna consciousness. His wife, she had one very bad habit. Oh, it was terrible. She liked to drink tea. That's a great sin. Compared to nowadays. So that was her only vice. She liked to drink tea and she would spend whatever money she could on tea biscuits. Because, you know, this was the British intervention into English, India. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody would stop and they would have tea and tea biscuits. And tea biscuits was a big business in those days. And so one time, because they didn't have much money, she wanted some tea biscuits. So Prabhupada had his copy of Srimad Bhagavatam that he would read regularly. So one day he came home and he was looking for his Bhagavatam. He couldn't find it, so he asked his wife, did you see my Bhagavatam? She said, oh, yes, I wanted some tea biscuits, so I traded your Bhagavatam in for the tea biscuits. And Prabhupada was just like, Because all the while he was trying to bring her along, but she was not coming along. She was a nice lady, very dutiful mother and housewife, so many things, but she wasn't so interested in his spiritual side. So he said to her, when he realized what she had done with his Bhagavatam, he said, "Tea or me?" And she said, "Tea." Yeah, this is true. And then he thought, here's a chance to end his household life. So gradually after that, things started to dwindle and he started moving away from household life. Although he tried to take care of his family in a less direct way, he found himself being more and more drawn to Krishna consciousness. And as his spiritual master society was growing, because Bhakti Siddhanta was preaching all over India, he had made 60 sannyasis. And they have been traveling all the way down, all the way from the top of India to the bottom, preaching and establishing many, many programs and many, many temples. So he was drawn into more and more Krishna conscious activities. And therefore he wasn't spending so much time with the family. And the business became less and less and less. At one point he retired from his business also. His boss didn't like that, said, "You know, I'll give you a raise in salary. In fact, I'll double your salary and give you less hours. Just stay with the business," because he was so expert at his business. So here, he had a good family, average family, good in that sense, expert in business, but his spiritual life was becoming his main absorption. And so gradually, he started to put some of the sons in charge of the family. His older son Vrindavan, he had a middle son named Prayag, and another younger son named Mathura. And of course, then gradually he moved into Krishna consciousness more and more, where at one point it was obvious that whatever he had in the past was no longer important to him. So he just... And gradually, of course, at one time Bhakti Siddhanta, after he had disappeared, he came to Prabhupada in a dream and said, "You should take a sannyas." Sannyas. Whoa. He wasn't ready for that. He went to his godbrother in the middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning, came to Sridhar Swami, one of his senior godbrothers. He said, "Guru Maharaj is appearing in my dreaming, telling me to take sannyas. How can I do that?" And then, you know, he was trying to pacify him. And then he had a second dream, same thing. Second time, Bhakti Siddhanta told him, "Take sannyas." And Prabhupada said, "I was horrified. My spiritual master is calling me, take sannyas." And so eventually, in 1959, he finally took sannyas. And later on, when he was in ISKCON, he was saying, "You know, I had, you're not going to like this." Anyway, he said, "You know, when I was living in my family, I had a wife and so many children. Now, I'm a sannyasi, I have 300 children and with no botheration of wife." So Krishna has provided so many children. Because, you know, the sannyasi, the guru is like, his disciples are like, they're like children. It's treated the same way. A spiritual master is seen as the father of their disciples. And so the father loves the disciples and the disciples love the spiritual master just as they would love a father or a parent. That's the actual relationship. And so Prabhupada eventually moved away from that. But even after he left, he made sure that his family, Jai Panchatattva Ki Jai. He made sure that his family got what they needed to take care. So sometimes he would send money through his elder son later on when he came to America and then when he had some money. He was always concerned that they were taken care of nicely. So, but ultimately, and he's also teaching us that at one stage in life, one has to move into the, an area of complete, what we say, renunciation of all material affairs, and focus fully on Krishna. It's not just for men, it's for everyone. Because the whole goal of life is to become Krishna conscious. So we go through different stages, and at one point we become married and we have family, and the children grow up and they get their positions in society, they have their own family. Then gradually the relationship between husband and wife becomes more of a friend, and then gradually that all still starts to diminish. And then one moves away from that and then ultimately focuses fully on their spiritual life. For ladies, they usually go to holy places and live there and serve the deity in the holy places, and that is called sannyas for women, generally. They don't take the formal sannyas with the danda like that, but they actually take the renounced mood by putting on white and living in holy places and serving the Lord in his deity form to the end of their life. And pretty much if they do that in full devotion, they're guaranteed to go back to the spiritual world. So this is the, because life is lived in stages. We see that even now. We live in, when we're young, we live in a certain way. As we get older, we, our values and our directions in life become less, or I mean changed, and we move in. And so even so in the later part of life, we see the idea of cutting away from all the responsibilities that keep us connected to the material existence and focus completely on devotional life. So Prabhupada was an ideal grihastha in that sense that he kept his responsibilities, and also even when he left the family, he made sure that the family was getting what they needed to take care of their responsibilities as much as he could, as much as he could. So Prabhupada did that even with the ISKCON society. He also, when he before he left, he also wanted to make sure that our ISKCON society was carrying on according to the disciplic succession as was started by Krishna himself. And therefore he put in place some of his leading disciples to take on the responsibility of initiating others. In 1974, one devotee, his name was Tushta Krishna. Later he became Tushta Krishna. Tushta Krishna. Yeah. And there was a Pushta Krishna and there was a Tushta Krishna. Tushta Krishna. And he wrote a letter to Prabhupada about, you know, do disciples, you know, when do they become qualified take on responsibility of a spiritual master. He says, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. He said he wants everyone to become spiritual master. By my command, be guru, save the land. He said that to the Kurma Brahma when Lord Chaitanya was passing. So he gave that order to everyone. Everyone to take on responsibility to become spiritual master. But there are some who actually take on the responsibility according to the principles of disciplic succession. So Prabhupada wrote back to Tushta Krishna, it's the etiquette of the disciple to take on the responsibility of preaching Krishna consciousness. And some may come forward and take the position of guru to carry on the disciplic succession, but not until, or not in the presence of their own spiritual master. So Prabhupada trained a lot of his followers to take up the responsibilities of keeping the disciplic succession alive. You'll see in our Krishna consciousness movement where it's unique, where you see in the disciplic succession there's one particular prominent guru, and it comes right down the line. But because ISKCON is a historical phenomenon, in the sense that there's never been a movement like this anywhere. In the sense that we are all over the world. Usually the guru and the disciple are in one place. But because we have a worldwide movement, it's not possible to take care of disciples. So there are many spiritual masters. What is the qualification of a spiritual master? Well, that's mentioned in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasmat guru papadyeta jigyasa shrey uttamam sabde pare chena nishnatman brahma upasraya shreyam. This is that verse that gives the qualification. One who knows fully the Vedas, can speak the Vedas, can defeat any opposing arguments that are against Vedic conclusions, and they come in the cyclic succession from the previous acharyas like that. So some people say, well, Prabhupada was the last guru, but actually no, that means that's the end of the cyclic succession. But Prabhupada empowered, he gave the empowerment, he also gave the direction, and he also gave the knowledge, which was the empowerment, in order to carry on the Krishna conscious movement. So Prabhupada said, I want many gurus. When someone asked Srila Prabhupada, can a woman become a guru? Prabhupada said, we have our Janava Devi. She was the wife, of course, of Lord Nityananda. And during the Kateri Gram festival in India, after Lord Chaitanya, she was the leading person in the entire assembly. And there was Srinivasacharya, there was Narottam Das Thakur, Ramachandra Kaviraj, many, many of the great associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who are still living. But she was considered to be the most exalted of all the Vaishnavas in every part of India at the time. And there were Vaishnavas in Navadvipa, there were in Jagannath Puri, and in Vrindavan, and in other places. So Prabhupada's legacy is that he wanted us to carry on this disciplic succession. And therefore he put so much emphasis on training devotees so they could take up the responsibility of becoming guru. And so, but anybody who thinks they're a guru is a guru. You know what a guru is? Yeah, it's a cow. Was that okay? Well, I think I do better. I have a little sore throat, so it's not a good cow. But the idea is, no, one does not identify themselves with the position they play. Just like I could say to you, are you a woman? Yes? No. You got a woman's body. You're a spiritual being who has a body of a woman. That's all. That's the reality. Of course, when we identify with our material, you know, labels, we say, well, I'm a woman, I'm young, I'm old, I'm happy, I'm hungry, you know, so many different things we say, but these are all external. Our identity is Jiva Sudupai Krishnera Nitya Das. Every living entity is the same. Every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, and every living entity has an eternal loving relationship with Krishna. And that doesn't change, no matter, your bodies have nothing to do with that relationship. With that identity. So Prabhupada knew that I've created a worldwide society, how to keep it going. So therefore he instructed devotees who were his senior devotees to take up the responsibilities of carrying on the disciplic succession, and he empowered 11 personalities at the time take on that responsibility to keep the disciplic succession going. And so on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya, that is that he is what is called the ultimate principle of how the society works. His knowledge, his direction, his instructions, his books, everything that he did to make this society and develop it and to propagate it is all centered around Srila Prabhupada. So those who come in the line of disciplic succession, who have their own disciples also, they connect everyone to Srila Prabhupada. Not that they have, they're independent. And so each of the gurus in the ISKCON society have their own disciples. But it's like a family where there are many uncles and cousins like that. So we have so many fathers, we have so many uncles, we have so many cousins, we have so many nephews and nieces like that. That's how Prabhupada organized the society. And so he knew that the society could not go on in the what we call the way that was designed unless he had some disciples who could take on the responsibilities of guru and make disciples all over the world. And when Prabhupada was asked, well, once we make disciples, this is just before he left, will they be your guru, your disciple? He said, no, they'll be your disciple. You're the one, you're their guru, you'll be your disciple. I am their, like, param guru. That means grand disciple, or like grandfather disciple, and that grandfather spiritual master, like that. So Prabhupada was very responsible. We can see it, the connection to his household life, how when he left that, he made sure everything was going on nicely. And at the same time, when he left this society, he put everything in place so this society could go on in the same way. And we're actually seeing that. Our society has only grown. Prabhupada was a little concerned just before he left. He said, you may not be able to increase it, but don't destroy it. He said that to us. keep going what I established. But it's amazing, because now, when Prabhupada was here, we had, you know, a couple of hundred temples, maybe at the most. And now we have, you know, I don't know how many temples around the world? 600 temples, farm communities, gurukuls, schools, restaurants, preaching centers. And then the society has expanded by the mercy of Prabhupada, because he empowered his leading disciples to preach all over the world and take on responsibility of becoming spiritual master and empowering those devotees who have become his, what we say, nephews and nieces, their disciples, to preach Krishna consciousness. Now you can see, because that didn't happen when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati left. And Prabhupada was concerned that he would have the same problem when he left. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, just before he left, he told his leading disciples to establish a governing body commission to manage this society. And they didn't do it. And after he left, they were starting to fight. Well, I'm the guru. No, I'm the guru. And Prabhupada said they were fighting in court for three or four decades. Even when Prabhupada was here, that the court cases were still going on. Who's the actual legacy or the main guru in Bhakti Siddhanta's line? So that was never really. And finally, the courts threw it out of court and it became something unfinished. But Prabhupada established a governing body commission with the managing society, but at the same time, he empowered his leading disciples to take on responsibilities of becoming full spiritual masters. And because of that, Prabhupada was a good manager. Oh, he was a good manager. Sometimes you have a powerful spiritual person, but they can't manage. And sometimes you have great managers, and they have a hard time with their japa. But Prabhupada was an expert manager. So expert. And so how he managed this society was so amazing. Just like one time the devotees wanted to centralize everything, put everything in one area and make that just like a very, they say, we got people all over, we just centralize it, and that way we can boil the milk and make devotees more powerful, our movement more powerful. Prabhupada said, don't centralize everything. Keep every temple independently functioning. But we work together as a group, but we all have our own individual temple. And that saved our whole movement. There wouldn't be any movement if we would have centralized that. Because in America, there were court cases, and they wanted to sue ISKCON, but they couldn't because there was no ISKCON entity. Every temple was separate. So they had to sue every temple independently. And because they tried, and they managed to take a few temples and put them on in court cases, and some of the court cases we won. But if they would have made an entity and they would have won, the whole society could have been bankrupt and destroyed. But Prabhupada's managing foresight saved his whole society. And so sometimes people say, well, Prabhupada didn't bring any persons to carry on his legacy. That's not true. Because the disciplic succession means gurus, disciples. Maybe one of the disciples becomes guru, and then there's more disciples. And this way, it carries on decade after decade with gurus and disciples like that. But within the ISKCON society, Prabhupada has a unique position. He's called the founder acharya. No one can take his position. His position is unique because he has established how this society goes on in terms of the philosophy and the practice and like that. So I just wanted to point out Prabhupada's expertise and how he did everything in the most amazing way. And at the same time, traveling around the world and preaching, giving classes, or translating books, dealing with organizational problems, individual problems, so many things. It was amazing what Prabhupada did. But he left nothing uncovered. He said, only one thing is left that I haven't done. He said, this is my regret. We haven't established Vanashram system. He wanted Vanashram. What did he mean by Vanashram? He wanted to establish these rural communities. He said, this society, this material society will collapse. We're seeing it. We're right in the middle of some collapse right now. He said, it will not go on. We have to establish self-sufficiency where we have our own communities. We can develop our own food, grow vegetables, keep cows, grow grains, and live according to what we say natural living and not dependent on factories and cinemas and bars and nightclubs and tea shops and whatever else we got out there. So Prabhupada, he said that's the only thing he didn't establish was this one. So this is what we have to work on, establishing this next phase of Prabhupada's movement, these natural farm communities. And it doesn't have to be so much of a farm, but it should be rural. Because Prabhupada said these cities, they won't last, they'll collapse. You know? They're already collapsing. How long can they go on? Because collapse is not some mismanagement of some social, political, or economic affairs. Because that's what they think. When things go wrong, they try to adjust the economy, they try to adjust the social principles. Collapse is moral turpitude. When morality goes down, everything goes. And nowadays, what is morality? Whatever you want to do, that is okay, right? Morality is self-defined. Yeah. Your country's pretty good. Go to America. It's hell. Hell. It is hell. Everybody does what they want in the name of freedom of expression. That's like that. And so, four regulative principles, everybody follows them, but they all follow them. They make sure there's a lot of illicit sex, they make sure there's a lot of intoxication, there's a lot of meat eating, a lot of gambling, a lot of other stuff that falls into these categories. So when morality goes, everything goes. And Krishna, and then what happens? The earth withdraws and starts punishing people for their sinful activities, and what you have? Coronavirus. It's in the Bhagavatam. Look it up. 7th canto, 15th chapter, verse number 24, Prabhupada says, due to sinful activities, pestilence and wars come. This is the reaction to sinful activity. So the world is pretty degraded. It's very degraded. You're lucky. Your country is lucky you were communist for a while. That was your good fortune. You were blocked from all this, corruption and degradation. But now it's filtering in. It's coming everywhere like that. So you're a little bit behind the rest of the degradation, but it'll catch up. It's just the way it is. And so as that increases, then Mother Nature does two things. She provides and she punishes. When you follow the laws of God, she gives. When you don't, she withholds and punishes, depending on the severity of it. So that's what's happening now. Mother Nature is reacting to the sinful activities, the collective sinful activities of the planet. So these farm communities are actually the future of the world. And Prabhupada wanted to establish these things. He said, keep the temples and the cities for preaching, live on the farms. He said, you'll have more time for chanting Hare Krishna, and everything is much more, what we say, natural and normal. You can breathe out there. You know, you heard of that thing called air? It's becoming less. The more pollution, the less the amount of oxygen in the air, and the more people get sick. There's one thing good about your country. There's many good things I noticed. But one thing good, people like to go outdoors here, right? And they're in the mountains, they're on the seashore, they're always doing it. People are healthy here, and that's good. You're living in the cities and, with smog and noise and pollution and whatever else you got to go on, is noisy neighbors. There's so many things, it's just causes the living entity to, fight to exist, health-wise, aesthetic-wise, moral-wise, spiritual-wise. So Prabhupada had Prabhupada's vision was wide. He had a vision for a complete change in the whole world, making everything simple and spiritual. That was his whole idea. That was Srila Prabhupada. So he established, the future of our movement through his legacy of empowering his leading disciples to take on the same thing he was doing, preaching, making disciples, and writing books too. He said, every sannyasi has to write. He said that. All the sannyasis have to write, and everybody else can write too. Nowadays, it's not hard to write a book, right? Anybody can write a book. Pick a topic, just do some research. Anything on spiritual life, you can write a book and people will read it. So writing is good. We want more and more books. Prabhupada said, this is our tradition. I write and you write books about my books. And then we write more and more books, and we flood the world with transcendental literature. The thing is, you have to somehow counteract the negativity with the positive. So we want to just flood the world with Krishna consciousness. And then people will start to understand how you can actually really be happy. Krishna consciousness is the perfect position for eternal happiness and healthy living. Any questions? Comments? Oh yes, Mangalachara and Chandrika? We have a microphone? Yeah.
You mentioned how when children grow up in old age that one should dedicate his or her life to Krishna consciousness more. And we hear this many times. And I was reflecting how actually when we get older, it seems we have more challenges because, our body gets older and we're less tolerant and, there's just bodily-wise, material-wise, it's more challenging to absorb oneself. Mm. And I was meditating how basically this tendency to, this Prabhupada's instruction to live simply and think high.
Prabhupada wanted to establish these communities around the world where devotees can. And it's not like your family is the only one that's going to take care of you. We see, this is how we run our society, that each devotee sees each other as family members. And so, devotees caring for devotees. That's part of the whole, what we say, social development of our society. Just like, you know, I was in London one day and I was eating breakfast. And so I bit into an almond and I broke my tooth. And I was thinking, oh no. All right, oh, Krishna Katha. Krishna Kirtan. Yeah, he's my friend, he's a dentist. So I called him up and I said, I broke my tooth. He said, can you come in today at 2 o'clock? I said, yeah. Okay. So I had my tooth fixed. Same day. So, you know, he's not a relative. I didn't pay anything. We get sick, you know, we have doctors too. You know, if I get sick, I call up my overall doctor in London, Sundarananda, I said, and he refers me to other doctors and they give me advice. I have my doctor in India, he's an Ayurvedic physician. He's one of the top Ayurvedic physicians in India. I just ask him, this is my problem, what's this medicine? All right, you do this. And he gives me the formula, sends me everything, tells me what to buy. Yeah. So we have a society where we have so much talent. If we all organize that talent and ability, nobody has to go outside to any kind of what we say materialistic person to get whatever we need. It's all here. So even taking care of elderly, it's there. We set up, just like where we have this gentleman here, Bhavananda, I think is now. He's here. He's just in a restaurant over there. Devotees are there with him all the time. He's elderly. He needs some personal care. So we do that. It's not that our family members are our only hope when we get old. You know, they're there also, but we have a whole society. It's like one devotee, something happened to him, I think. He's a good friend of mine, he was in London, and he's from Australia. So, I forgot what he got. He got some real bad illness. So he has health insurance in Australia. But he was in London and he couldn't travel because of his health. They said if he went on a plane he would probably die. So he couldn't take advantage of health insurance. So what happened? The devotees put on the net. This devotee needs money. Within a couple of weeks they raised $10,000. Yeah, and I can name so many devotees. Yeah, Indradumna Maharaj, anytime he finds a devotee who gets sick, he goes on this thing and he puts it out. Come on, we need some money for this devotee. He's always helping devotees. So we have a system. It's not fully put in place where devotees can get anything they need at any time in any part of the world. It just needs to be expanded. Like that. So we don't have to worry when we get old. You might say, well, you're a sannyasi, that's a little different. But no, we do that for everyone. No matter who they are. If they're a devotee, we try to take care of them in whatever way we can. Because devotees are special. So I don't think there's any worry. And you know what? Devotees like to help devotees. They actually enjoy it. In fact, tell me something that you need and I'll try to help you. Devotees even say that. Can I do something for you? Well, no. Well, if you need something, just let me know. Just like in India, in the chaupati system under Radhana Swami, if they people don't even have a job, they have people to help them get jobs. They need doctors, that's taken care of. They need marriage counseling, that's taken care of. They need, a boy wants to find a girl wants to find a boy. They have a system where they put their names in and they arrange devotees to meet together and develop relationships. So this is our society. It's developing in that way. It's not all around the world yet. But that is what we want to do, because Prabhupada said, and it's true, this society will not be able to maintain. You know, someday, you know, the whole thing, you know, the water could be cut off, the gas could be cut off, you know, if the whole thing fails. If you depend on this society, then you're going to have problems. So Prabhupada wanted this, what we say, a society within a society, where we can be insular and take care of devotees. And also people from the outside, if they came, they could also get what they needed. The only problem is it's not 100% yet. We're still working on it. But the GBC has set up a devotee care it's a feature of the GBC, the devotee care committee. Yeah, it's a committee of leading devotees who work only on caring for devotees. That's all they do. That's their service. I don't know if that answered your question. It was okay?
Yeah. I was just thinking probably it also makes sense to start being absorbed in Krishna consciousness earlier rather than wait until we are...
Yeah, Prahlad Maharaj gives that instruction. From the very beginning of childhood, one should practice Krishna consciousness. There's a story with one Greek educator. His name is Diogenes. So one lady, she came to Diogenes and she said, "My dear Diogenes, I have a son. I want to bring him to you for education." Diogenes says, "How old is the boy?" And she said, "He's 5. He said, "Bring him immediately. We're already 5 years too late." Komara arjati pragya dharma bhagata hiha. You know, education starts within the womb. Yeah. You see, look at these two gentlemen here. From the very beginning. Yeah, look at them. Ideal devotees. Very gentlemanly like. They know they like Krishna consciousness. They're respectful to everybody. They have many good qualities. Their parents brought them up from the very beginning. This is Krishna consciousness. There's many like that. There's the other one. She's smiling brightly. I told her, "You're not from this world. Where'd you come from?" From another planet. High planet. So yeah, you know, this is the responsibility of parents to raise their children and give them Krishna consciousness. And if they do that, that is the complete duty of a parent. When they do that, their life has become successful. They have fulfilled the role of mother and father perfectly. So yeah, that's what we're teaching. That if you're going to have children, make sure you can educate them and take care of them at the same time. Yeah, so we need to work on it yet. I'm not saying we have it on the social level. It's not complete, but it's something that is in the process. We're still developing that. So you might think, how can we do it here in Slovenia? More and more. Pradesh, it's pretty good there, right? They're doing it, right? Not Gurukul, but Sunday school. But that's something. Okay, now, there was another question I saw somewhere. Where was that other question? Oh, she left? Oh, take care of the kids. Okay. Okay, so should we stop here? Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Srila Prabhupada Ki.